Do you lie awake at night wishing for something better? When you look at your future a year from now, is there a light at the end of that tunnel? Do you feel like you were meant for something more? Opportunity will not come knocking on your door unless you're out there looking for it. How do you do it? Our guests on the Empower Radio Show will be sharing their secret to success. We'll be bringing you authors, speakers, entrepreneurs from many different fields who come from various backgrounds. They will be sharing their stories of success and of early failures. You'll hear about the challenges they faced when they launched their ideas and the creative ways that they overcame obstacles. Our guests will inspire you to find your way down the path to success in this ever-changing world. Jump on board and become empowered.
Welcome, welcome to the Empower Radio Show. I am your host today. This is Linda Ballesteros, and we are going to be talking about the topic of business and specifically family-owned businesses. So just be sure to have paper and pen handy because there's going to be some great information you're going to want to make note of, especially if you're a small business owner, whether you have family engaged at this time or not. Who knows? You know, it could be that when your four-year-old gets to be 18, she wants to be a part of the family. So you're going to want to start thinking about that ahead. But I would encourage you to follow us on Facebook, Empower Radio Show, and that's the letter M, the word power, Radio Show, and as well as on Twitter. And check out our new website, empowerradioshow.com. where you can catch up on all of the past interviews and hear some great speakers, some great experts talking about a lot of different areas of ways that you can empower yourself, whether it's in your business or in your personal life. So be sure to check that out. We welcome any followers. So today we have Emily Bouchard. She is a specialist in building relationships that allow people to thrive in their lives. For over 20 years, Emily has worked with children, individuals, couples, and families, building skills to overcome significant challenges. And she is the founder of blendedfamilies.com, where she coaches and makes a positive difference in the lives of step families. And Emily is also the managing partner of Wealth Legacy Group, and their team of coaches actually help their clients on how to successfully navigate the emotional impact of wealth and family dynamics in a family business. She's been featured on the Today Show, CNN, Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times. And she's also the co-author of Estate Planning for the Blended Family. So please help me welcome Emily Bouchard. Hello, Emily.
Hi, Linda. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. You know, this is one of those topics, Emily, that a lot of people don't think about when they maybe leave that corporate job and they start building a business, and they don't think about what it's going to look like in 10 or 15 years when maybe family members come in. Before we start talking about that, tell me a little bit about why you became interested in blended families, whether it was business related or in their personal lives.
Oh, thank you for asking. It's come by me from the time I was born, really. I was born into a blended family in the sense that I had a step-grandfather and two step-aunts, and it was always part of our life. It didn't seem different to me. And then when my mother passed away and my father remarried, I became a stepdaughter, and I suddenly had more step-grandparents and cousins and aunts and uncles. We weren't related by blood, but we were really an incredibly wonderful extended family. And then fast forward to a number of years later, I met my my husband, and he had two teenagers. And so we were together for 11 years, and I was a stepmother to these two teenagers, one of whom ended up having a child when she was 19. And so I became a step-grandmother when I was 31. So
wow.
I had a chance to experience it very much personally. And I was really fascinated by family dynamics, and I had a degree in child development, and I have a degree in social work with an emphasis on marital and family therapy. And when I became a step parent, I suddenly looked at, wow, there's a lot of things in theory, but what actually works when you're in the thick of it? And I started a group for couples that were dealing with blended family issues, and then a group for women, stepmoms. And really did a lot of work around what makes this work, what really has it so that families that are not necessarily your typical nuclear family can thrive. And then it morphed into the family businesses over time when I was referred to a company that worked with transitioning wealth and assets intergenerationally. And I was involved in the family dynamics piece, interviewing all the family members and helping to co-facilitate family meetings. And so I was helping with families that were, you know, grandparents, their kids, the in-laws, you know, their kids' spouses, and then teenagers, so 15 and older, that next generation as well. And so it was really quite an experience of working with all the intergenerational dynamics, the in-laws being treated as outlaws, and then looking at how does this work when somebody's an owner of a business but doesn't work in the business, or if somebody like an in-law is working in the business but they don't own any of it. And really looking at, wow, what's at play with this? And so I became fascinated with that, got a lot of training in that, and have been doing it since 2004.
It would just have to me, it seems like the dynamics that are going on at home would carry over into the business. So how do you first work with them from a personal level, from the relationship that happens at home, or do you start with the business?
Oh, I always meet people right where they are. So people often come to us with like a tactical concern, like, wow, how do we make sure that we do the right estate plan so that we mitigate taxes, or we make sure that we're having everybody own it in a way that it's in the best structure possible. People are very tactical. Often, you know, entrepreneurs are successful because they're that way. And so what we do is we meet them there. We look at the breadth and scope of the question that they really want to address. And then we also bring in what we would call the more strategic, more qualitative side of the question, which is, you know, we can show you a bunch of different best practices in that field. What happens is if you don't take care of the family dynamics at play in the midst of that, oftentimes the structures that you choose and the strategies that you choose blow apart when you're no longer here, like 70% of the time. Whatever the best intentions were, they end up not working out because family members hadn't been included, and there were a lot of unresolved issues that weren't addressed when they could have been. And then it all plays out in terms of the money and the ownership. So what we do is we show people how important it is to do both and.
Well, you know, just folks, to give you a little bit of perspective of the size of a family-owned business industry. Just to give you a little glimpse of that, I looked up something on Bloomberg today, and it said family-owned businesses generate 60%, that's 60% of the country's employment and 78% of all new jobs created. So we're talking about a huge industry. Now, that does include some of the really large companies like Walmart and Ford, and, you know, there's some huge industries out there that began, they started as family-owned businesses. So, Emily, I know that they can really grow. They can, you know, Sam Walton, I'm sure, would be amazed at the way Walmart has grown and Sam's has grown. But what you really, I would think you would really have to put some good foundations in the beginning and really set the stage early on to prevent or to mitigate some of the problems you might have with a typical family-owned business. How can you talk families through that process of starting early?
Well, wouldn't that be great if people did that? Oh, I love it when families come to us. But that, I mean, I'm thinking of one family I worked with where, you know, it was not so much about, oh, we have family conflict. It was that the father had had a cancer scare. He had been treated for cancer, and it brought him face to face with his mortality. And he thought, wow, I need to do some intentional planning here with my two younger kids and look at what they want to do and how we're going to incorporate them. So we worked with him and his wife and their two kids. They had a car dealership, and the kids were both very interested. And they were young people. They were in their 20s, and they went and got MBAs while they were working in the family business. And we created very specific roles and responsibilities, and also dealt with the family dynamics at play, where the father was a very successful businessman, really respected in the community. Everybody knew their last name. And what that impact had been on the kids growing up in that community now that they were coming back to work in the business. How are they going to establish their identity? How are they going to deal with the presumptions that people would make about them, entitlement? And the next generation has to work that much harder to prove themselves. And also looking at how the wife was treated, where she wasn't really included or allowed to take part when she would have liked to have been. And then her son and her daughter looked at ways of including her, tapping into her skills and talents in terms of she was award-winning in the Smithsonian level, a decorator and interior design and also landscaping. And so they looked at how to incorporate her as they remodeled showrooms. And so that's one example of how we looked at intergenerationally working together to take care of past hurts and older issues that may have dealt with some resentment or some hurt feelings, and then healing that, dealing with how that could look in the future, very future-oriented in terms of how this could look going forward. So that's one example. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's what comes to mind.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely it does. Because I would think that many times the founder of the company doesn't think that he has to worry about that right now. That's something that can be put off until sometime in the future. But another one of the stats that I found is the average lifespan of a family-owned business is only 24 years, which really surprised me. So why do you think that that maybe the next generation doesn't step up and want to be a part of the business? Or why do you think that stat of 24 years is lifespan of a family-owned business?
It's a good question, and we've been really puzzling about that as well. And I'm part of a research project looking at 100-year businesses where families have been successful intergenerationally for at least 100 years of growth and development. And there are some key distinctions that set apart families that are able to design and have family businesses that continue for the long haul, and where what we would call the rising generation are included and incorporated early on in ways where they get to express their particular style and approach, and also get the training that they need early on and mentorship so that they can be really successful in the roles that they want to be in. Mm-hmm. And then having really clear governance makes a big difference. And that's a term, like a jargon term in the industry, but basically what it means is how do we make decisions? Who's involved in making those decisions? Does everybody have a voice, and to what degree? And how do we set up structures around ownership related to that? And having those things in place makes a big difference. And having it be in place in a way where everyone who could potentially be involved is included in the process. There's a lot of fear that keeps people from including the rising generation, because they don't want them to be presuming that because they've said what they wanted that they're going to get it, or that they don't want to deny them or somehow impact their own level of their work ethic and their drive to make it in the world on their own. So that's another reason why people tend to hold back and not include, but it ends up being really detrimental. And I'll give you an example. There was somebody I met on a plane, and when he found out what I did, he looked at me and he said, oh, my gosh, do you work with prenups? I said, well, yeah, we work with people, and having prenups really strengthen the marriage and strengthen the connection and connectivity instead of having it be something that has you start off on the bad foot. And then he told me that his daughter, he raised to think that she was never going to receive anything. But the reality was he had structures in place where she was going to be receiving literally hundreds of millions of dollars. And I said, well, you have a bigger issue on your hands than just a prenup. You know, yeah, you're going to need to disclose all that then. But how is she, this young woman who's about to get married, launched into her life, going to be prepared to handle all of that's involved in having that level of ownership of something that she didn't even know she had? So that's where, you know, you can look at how do you prepare and how do you make it so people can be very successful in wanting to be involved, and it's by being including them.
Right. And in a way, I'm sure that he felt that he was protecting her and maybe providing something for her that he had to work very hard for, and he didn't want her to work as hard. But and it really was going to create a bigger problem for her if she stepped out trying to run a business, manage all of this money with absolutely no experience. So I can see what you're saying, that you know, the prenup was probably the least of his worries at that moment. But how do you involve the younger generation in a business that has been founded by maybe a baby boomer or someone in their 50s that has a not just a different work ethic, but a different perspective of how to run a business? How do you get that communication between them?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. It's so important because there can be this initial response that automatically happens for people, which is, this is how I do it. This is the way it's done. And then when the different generations, whether it's Generation X or Generation Y, Millennials, Generation Z, come forward with how they see to do it and how they see the world, there can be an initial clash or distrust of it or not liking. And so we work with people on distinctions around how to communicate effectively and how to listen effectively and how to really move from a place of deeply caring and respecting the person that's speaking and looking at what you can learn from them, as opposed to immediately closing yourself off because not liking it or having it be different than what you see is important. One of the biggest tricks that we have to work with in families is that the person who's typically the founder of a business that's successful has some not only generational traits, but also some personality traits or ways of moving in the world that have made it so they could be successful, that may also have impacted their way of relating to their children as their children were growing up. And so that needs to be addressed too, where the children need to feel like what they say and what they feel matters, and you know, that they're not children anymore, that they're adults as well, and that they have a lot to offer. And there can be a lot at play when a parent has not been around very much, because they have been so busy building the business for the sake of the family. Oftentimes a lot of meaning can be made by children as they're growing up about that and what that means about the parent's level of care for them. And, you know, it's that quality time together that makes all the difference. And so we often will work with how to address maybe the disappointment or the dissatisfaction from the past a little bit, but much more so how we would want to design the future. And how do we not let those things from the past keep us from creating what we want going forward?
I'm sure that once you're able to address that the relationship both at work and at home has a tendency to shift, because many times it's what's unsaid that creates the problems. And once that it's said, once it's put on the table, it kind of settles down a bit. Do you find that?
It's interesting, right? Because what will often happen is when a lot has gone unsaid for a long period of time, without the right kind of container and coaching around how to be able to express these things, what we often will see is people will dump a bucket. Like, they'll come forward and they'll say one thing, and then once there's a space for some listening for it, they will bring forward every possible thing that is, you know, in that bucket, but may or may not even be related to what they initially brought forward. And so we also give people skills on how to manage that, how to take care of the concern, the underlying concern that's being pointed to from all of the complaints that might come forward, and then also how to, and one tool people can use right away is we call it putting it in the, on ice in the cooler. You know, we often, we talk, and the analogy we use is going down a whitewater river, right? You know that there's things you're going to have to navigate along the way, and you want to know who's in that raft with you and that you're working well together. And sometimes what will happen is somebody will come forward and they will bring forward something that's very important to them but may not be relevant to what's at hand. And you want to make sure that that's honored, and so you can let them know that's a great issue, that really glad you brought it up. Thank you for letting us know that that really matters to you, so that there's a move of respect around it, not shutting it down, and then saying, let's put that on ice in the cooler and make sure that we carve out some time to talk about that either later today or at another meeting or maybe one-on-one if it seems like it's something between, you know, the son and the father. You know, so that there's a way in which it doesn't get dismissed or shut down. And it also doesn't necessarily need to derail whatever is on the agenda that you need to cover.
And I can see where that certainly can happen. We're talking about some of the examples you've given have been pretty large companies. What size companies do you find are more open and willing to embrace this?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. We work with businesses of all sizes. I'm thinking about one business that's an HVAC business. They have a franchise in the heating and air conditioning business, and they were looking at the father shifting his role and bringing one of the sons in as managing the business, and another son was still going to be owner of the business but not be in it. And so they really needed some support around how do we go about doing this? How do we look at the father-son and father-mother-son dynamic in the business, and then how do we deal with the familial issues in terms of management versus and ownership so that everybody feels really respected? So they did a contract with us to deal with those particular issues, and then we also gave them some key tools and ways that they can approach their meetings in the future that they could do on their own. So just whatever your size of your company is, whatever the size of the family is, how many generations you have involved, there's different levels of engagement that people do with us. So.
You know, what I see happen, my husband has worked with some family-owned businesses before as well, and what we've seen is that the family can come in and fill in those key roles, whether it is, you know, let's just say a plumber. So, you know, Mr. Plumber starts his own plumbing business. His wife does, Mrs. Plumber does the bookkeeping. And then little Johnny Plumber, he decides to come on and be an apprentice with his father. But at some point, Emily, do you see where the needs for the business outgrows their level of knowledge? And at that point, how do they bring someone else in to a family dynamic?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm going to answer a couple of different ways, too. One of the things that we really support people in is clearly defining the roles and responsibilities within the business structure, and that's useful for any business. You know, you really want to have clearly defined expectations for the role, not just in terms of the fulfillment of the role, but also the qualifications of the role. And so the more that's very clear for everybody in the business, then if a family member, a cousin, an in-law, anybody shows an interest in working in the business, they're treated as anybody would be who is going to be hired for that role. What are their qualifications? And if they don't have it but they have the interest, then oftentimes family will use their resources to support that person to develop the skills that they need to have the qualifications. And if it's somebody that needs to come from the outside and work in the family business, again, they're looked at in terms of their overall qualifications, what they have, and what's their experience in family business and family systems, and that knowing that that's part of this particular business structure, and making sure that it's made overt. And so, like, one example, I'm thinking about a client I have it's interesting. She's a blended family client. She's working with me on some stepmother issues that she's having with her husband's former spouse and her stepson. And she was asked to, as a consultant, work with her husband's cousin's firm. And she looked at it and she thought, well, this is a great opportunity and it could be a wonderful way to do more work. But then she started to see the family dynamics at play. And so here she's kind of part of the family, little distant cousin. And she also saw that, wow, they have a dynamic at play that if I want to maintain really great family relationships, I don't want to be working with them in a business relationship. So you need to be very aware of what the dynamics are of the family. And I would recommend anybody who's going to work in a family business be upfront about that and say, hey, what's your awareness about how family dynamics are at play here? And what are the things that I'm going to be looking at and needing to be involved in? And how do I best move with that when those dynamics show up? Like, if a father and son are used to shouting at each other in the business, you know, environment, that's going to be different than other business environments. And is that part of the corporate culture? Is it acceptable for everybody to yell at each other? Or is that a corporate culture that you're willing to look at changing if we're looking at bringing in new, fresh approaches and ideas on how to relate? And so there, that can be that exchange back and forth around it.
Now, Emily, and my husband has experienced that where the father-son screaming matches were going on.
Oh, yeah, I didn't pull that out of the ether, for sure,
I'm sure you've seen that one, you know, and since, you know, we don't really scream in our house, it was not something he was used to being around, so it was very stressful, even though it felt normal to the father and son. They
had no clue
how the negative impact it was making on the rest of the employees that weren't part of that family. So something that the family thinks is normal may not be quite so normal for employees if they're outside of the family.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing for somebody who's in a position of, well, you know, I don't want to bring it up because I don't want to lose my job. And at the same time, if it's really impacting job satisfaction, it might be something useful to, you know, sometimes people bring us in and do 360s where they get a lot of feedback and they can get great training and leadership and development in their own growth in terms of how they want to be as a company, and then also as father and son, as that might be. And sometimes it's a son and a brother-in-law, right? Like there's all kinds of different classes and dynamics that can happen. And the more people have new tools and ways of approaching conflict or, differences of opinion, the more likely the company will be successful and last more than those 24 years.
So there certainly is a certain amount of negotiating that has to happen within the family in a way that it is more professional than it is maybe the way they negotiate in their personal life.
That's an interesting word, you know, negotiating. It's something that we're doing all the time, right? And when we're negotiating, we're looking at, hey, how do we both get what we want? And the more we can support people in having that kind of experience, the better. And I think what happens a lot of times is people fall into the win-lose approach, like the zero-sum game. And when you have the family dynamics, there's so much to play around that from, you know, day one of the relationship starting. And so what we like to do is broaden it out so people see that there's new ways of relating where they can both win, they can both expand their capacity of relating with each other that's really going to support how they relate with their customers, with their vendors, with new employees that come in. And, you know, one thing I offer to people, like, in your husband's position, like, if they're noticing the yelling really getting to them, is shifting their approach to it, where it doesn't necessarily have to hit them so hard, and there can even be, I invite people to have almost a playful mood about it, which is, if you're around a father and son that are really going at it, you know, there's a way in which you can bring it to their attention, and it's like, you know, it looks like we'll need to maybe take a break in the meeting. It looks like this is a father-son thing. How much time do you guys think that's going to take before we can, you know, resume it? I think let's call a break, let you guys take care of that. And we often recommend that people bring in sometimes a concept of the different hats. You know, as your father, I'm really wanting you to be successful, and I love you, and I really want you to be supported. And as the owner of this business, that idea is really going to take us down the tank, and there's no way that we can go with it without more information. It's not a son mm-hmm. thing. It's, you know, if anybody came to me with this, I would feel that way to help distinguish it out. And so if you have that in the company culture, then anybody in the company could say, oh, wow, looks like we shifted into a father-son dynamic. You guys want to take that offline and we can get back to you? Or how long, you know, so that it brings that awareness to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I have seen businesses that have grown just to support the family. So they have created jobs. They have expanded their client base. They have brought in more revenue, and it's simply for supporting another family member, not necessarily for growing the company. Do you see that sometimes families see the company bank account as an extension of their own personal?
Oh, you said that so diplomatically. I love that. I'm sure anybody who has any accounting background is just cringing right now with that one. It's like, I remember going to a training early on when I put on my entrepreneurial hat and was getting ready to start my company, and this wonderful accountant came forward and he said, he picked up two wallets. This is your business wallet. This is your business account. This is your personal. And he had us repeat it back and forth over and over again. And it always stuck with me. And it is a major issue that can happen. And you need to have really clear distinctions about that. And the biggest issue that happens in families is people who are owners but not managers see people in the company getting perks, maybe using the company expense account for what doesn't necessarily look like as for the company, and it's like gray area, and it can cause a lot of issues in the family dynamics, especially when the parents are no longer there. And the more that can be clean and pristine and everybody is held to a certain standard, the better for all the family members.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because if it's abused, then at some point, if they decide they want to sell the company, there's not going to be much more than just a skeleton to sell, that is, if they haven't invested back into the company.
Right. I mean, I think that's what you're speaking into in terms of that statistic of only 24 years. There's people who are very, very savvy and willing and able to approach their business that they designed as if it's a business. And if mm-hmm. they treat it as an extension of themselves, like they're a sole proprietor and this is the way I live, yeah, you're right, there's not going to be much there to sell or offer. And the other piece I'll also add that I see a lot in my work is somebody who's built a really phenomenal business is so overly identified with the business being their identity that when it comes time to transition, in a way when they have perfect health, when people are really excited and ready to do it, when they're not able to hand over the reins or begin to train and have mentorship and have a succession plan in place, and they keep holding on really tightly to the reins, they will definitely dramatically impact the capacity of that company to sell and have a good exit strategy because, if you wait until they're no longer able to run the business, sometimes it's too late to be able to have that transition happen in a really effective way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there again, life goes on. So if it's 10, 15, 20 years down the road, then a lot of the characters in the family have changed. So, you specialize in blended families. So when you start having blended family issues in with the family business, I'm sure that can certainly complicate things even more.
Oh, my, yes. Yeah, when you have a father who built the business and divorces the mother, and the mother had been in the business but is no longer in the business, and then the new wife becomes part of the business, and there's some children from the first marriage that are part of the business, you have total conflict of interest that can show up in a big way, right? Especially if the new wife is younger, and suddenly the strategy that was in place that was going to happen, the timeline trajectory changes. So, yeah, we work a lot with families that are looking at, wow, how do I honor the my initial family that I raised and promises that I might have made and expectations that have been fueled over the years, even as I decided to make a change in my life going forward in the future. And especially if there's younger children, like you might have two generations of children in families. Wow, how do I take care of both of those in a way that's really honoring of both? And also doesn't wed them in ways that are going to be really challenging in the future. Like, this isn't so much a family business, but it is an example of what can happen. There's the really famous actor, James Gandolfini, who is in that really famous mobster show. I can't think of the name of it, in his 50s. And he had a second family. He had a son who was 14 at the time when he passed away that was from his first marriage. And then he had a daughter from his second marriage who was, I think, maybe 18 months. And that, in his estate plan, which it was interesting, he had a will so everybody could know what his estate plan was. He set up very different, distinct plans for the two children and the two families. And he also wedded his two children together. He wanted to have them both be co-owners of a property he had in Italy. And he also stipulated that they could not sell the property until the youngest had turned, I think, over 25, which meant that his son wasn't going to be able to do anything, and he was going to be basically, you know, tied to his stepsister, who knows what's going to happen. Are they going to know each other growing up? They have two different mothers. Their father's not around anymore. But he is going to co-own a property with her in Italy until he's, 39? So it was a really, a wake-up call. And it was interesting because the show was The Soprano. The show dealt with a lot of family dynamics, of course, and what would happen if you included or didn't include somebody. And then it ended up being a kind of like a real-life drama in his family. And, you know, you do things that are fair versus equal in families to help take care of those concerns. And then if you're going to make a decision that's going to connect those kids for the long term, you want to make sure that you're connecting your values to it, what you want to have happen, what your hopes are, and if they're old enough to include them in it. And, of course, he didn't know he was going to die when his little girl was so young. And they're going to be stewarding their father's dream and their father's intention for a long time. And hopefully it will have a really great result for them. But you never know.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, you know, another stat that I found, it said the results of a survey founded that 70% of family businesses have no formal succession plans, and 22% admit that they don't really believe they need one. They don't think one's necessary. What would you say to that, Emily?
I'd say it's probably in keeping with the regular population. I mean, if we were to survey everybody listening to this right now and said, hey, do you have a will? You know, it's astonishing how many people know that they need to have one and should have one and don't, right? It's it's a very low number. And one of the things is it's having to confront our mortality. And by saying we don't need one is basically saying I'm going to be around forever. And it's an interesting thing. In our book, Estate Planning for the Blended Family, we list 11 fears and reasons why people don't do their estate plan. And part of your estate plan is your succession plan. And it creates such a mess for the people that you love when you don't do that. And what's so sad about it is you also miss out on this incredible opportunity to find out what it is that the people you care about and love the most care about and what is it that matters to them. I'm thinking about a blended family I'm working with right now. The wife has four daughters from a prior marriage, and they have two children together. And again, it's kind of a second generation thing. And they own a number of properties in different states, and the parents are coming forward and wanting the input of the older daughters in terms of, hey, we want to talk about usage of these properties. We want to talk about what you see in terms of which ones you have an attachment to that you might like to have stay in the family, and then how do you see it working if we did keep them in the family? And they're not promising anything, which is a really key distinction I want people to hear and understand. Opening up these conversations and allowing people to have their opinions matter and have what they see matter really makes a big difference. And you're not promising, you're not saying, oh, wow, because you want that, we're going to do it. It's more, wow, we want to take everybody's opinions into consideration and look at what we can design that really will work the best with looking at the whole picture, not just what we think. And the kids are really grateful for it, and it was really fascinating. One of the conversations with one of the daughters, she was grateful to talk about the physical, tangible properties, but she also talked about the fact that they had season tickets to one of their favorite teams. And she said, hey, is there any way to do legacy planning around those? And how do we do that within the family? Because it's some of our best memories, and it's something that I really love to continue for my kids as well and with my sisters and their cousins. And the parents hadn't even considered that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it also allows you to have that conversation when you're not in that emotional time, that highly emotional time when a loved one has passed away. So you're much clearer and are able to discuss it without the emotion of that.
Yeah, and then you're so much more empowered, too, when it does happen because those emotions can run so high. And if these conversations have happened and everybody's on board, then there's such a sense of relief in terms of, wow, we really know what we need to do to move forward here. And people know what their roles are. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've worked with where they didn't necessarily even know that they were co-executor with, you know, somebody else in the family, or they were put in the position of co-trustee, and they had no idea. And it's an astonishing thing to give somebody that level of responsibility without any training or preparedness for it.
Emily, before we go any further, how can people get in touch with you if they want to know more about the services that you offer? How did they get a copy of your book? How did they find out more about Emily?
Oh, thank you, Linda. They can go to wealthlegacygroup.net. If they're interested in our work with empowering beneficiaries and prenups and working with family businesses. There's some really good blogs on there and some videos that we've done talking about different things that are concerned to family businesses. And then there's blended-families.com, and they can go there if they have particular blended family issues, challenges with former spouses, with conflict of interest, and they can get the book from that site, or they can go to Amazon. It's Estate Planning for the Blended Family. It's a nice book. It has a CD in the back with a lot of documents to support people in being effective in working with their estate planning attorney and other advisors. And then they also get some really good, valuable information that allows them to work as efficiently as they can with their advisors. One of the things that keeps people from doing the estate planning is they look at the cost of it. And so we wanted to make it so that they felt really empowered, were asking really good questions, they understood what the different terms meant, so that when their estate planning attorney might say, well, you might want to use a CRAT versus a CRUT, they're not looking at them like, what are you talking about? They get that information ahead of time. And then also alleviate those fears and concerns and show people that the high cost of not doing it is way more than the cost of doing it and taking the time to do it. So, yeah, that's the best way is those two websites.
And would they be able to contact you through the websites? Is that the best way to reach out to you on one-on-one?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Or they can email me at emily@wealthlegacygroup.net. That's fine, too.
Okay. Very good. So, again, folks, visit Emily's website, wealthlegacygroup.com. And the other was blended-family.
I have a funny story about that. Our website is wealthlegacygroup.net. And there's a really fabulous financial advisor whose website is wealthlegacygroup.com. His name is R.J. Kelly, and he is a trusted advisor that we often recommend to people, and he does great work with franchisees. And we always let him know, you know, oh, an article just came out, be ready, you know, because, you know, it's just funny. And we have a wonderful symbiotic relationship. So it's fine if you go to .com, it's just not going to be us. .net is us, mostlegacygroup.net. And then the Blended Family has a dash in it. It's that little hyphen. So it's blended-families.com.
Yeah, awesome. So be sure to reach out to Emily if you have any questions, whether it's about blended families or whether it's about family businesses. You can certainly see that she's had a lot of experience with both and can help walk you through those white waters that you were describing earlier, Emily. So we're down to our final questions. So are you ready for the final three questions here, Emily?
Yes, I love that you do these. Yes.
So, okay, very good. So the first question is, when faced with obstacles, what kept you going?
Oh, you know, it's so amazing, right? Because the obstacles are always going to be there. And I would say pretty early on in my work, I discovered the work of Dr. Barry Morgulin and the EnergyForSuccess.org organization. And I've gotten some really invaluable tools from that. And I would say one of the biggest ones for me is this analogy of seeing the obstacles as like orange cones on the road, where the more that I can navigate effectively, I can still get to my goal. But I'm not going to stop my car and park on the side of the road until that orange cone is moved. Like, I'm not going to sit and wait for that. It's more like, wow, how do I bring my best self to discover and find alternative routes to get to where I need to go if the route that I thought I was going to take didn't end up turning out the way that I thought? And having that mood of ambition and openness and discovery as opposed to shutting down and going closed in terms of this isn't right and I don't like it. And it's something I bring a lot to the work I do with family.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting, Emily, is many times when we launch, so to speak, our business as an entrepreneur, in 10 years or in 15 years, it looks radically different than what we thought it would. So sometimes those orange cones can certainly be a blessing, and it can get us someplace that we never would have planned to have gone before.
Yeah. Definitely. It's so funny. I mean, I never even knew that the work that I do existed, right? I was in the social work environment. I was working with families. And then I was referred to a company that I honestly didn't know that this work existed. And I spent about 6 months researching, studying, learning about it in a way that would allow me to see if I could be successful at it. And now I absolutely love it.
And there's a huge need for it because there are more and more family-owned businesses out there, and there are more people creating small businesses than ever before. So there's certainly a need for it today as baby boomers begin to transition out and as new entrepreneurs start to build their legacy.
Definitely. I love what you're doing with your show to support people in that.
So our next question is, other than a coach, who has influenced you the most?
Oh, wow. Well, I would say working with Dr. Morgulin has really influenced me on many levels, for sure. When I thought about it, I was like, oh, who did it the most? And I think I'm going to say my stepmother. My stepmother was a physician. And she had a chronic illness that turned a corner, and she ended up not being able to be a physician any longer. And she spent most of her time in a wheelchair, and she shifted, and she used to be passionate about photography. And now she creates these handmade three-dimensional greeting cards that are sold in boutiques and museums. And she also makes jewelry. And she just is such an inspiration to me in terms of how she keeps reinventing herself as her body shift what it allows her to do. And I think mm-hmm. whenever I start to feel a bit under or challenged or not as effective as I'd like to be, I just think about her and what she's doing and how she is so effective with how limited she is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you've just described someone who has who is living a full life, whether she was a physician or whether it was through the stages of the her health challenges. She still continues to live a full life and feels, I'm sure, fulfilled by that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Well, our final question here is, how has curiosity played a part in your business and your life experiences?
I love that because it's one of the tenets of what I do in my work and one of the things that we really encourage people to take on in a big way. And the moment that you step into curiosity, you step out of certainty. And it allows for so many more possibilities to show up and so many more opportunities to show up in terms of how you relate, in terms of new business opportunities that can happen that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. And I am always curious. Every time I go into a family meeting, anytime I meet one-on-one with any of my clients, that would be the leading mood that I'm in, is who are you now and what matters to you? And how can I inquire in a way that will allow you to find and discover for yourself what's next? And that curiosity has me lead more with questions and with opening up possibilities with them as opposed to already knowing and telling. And so I would say for anybody who's listening, to take on one strategy that is incredibly useful is to listen, to inquire, and to be curious about the answers and to drop the knowing of who that person is in front of you, or telling them what you think is best or right for them.
That is so true. And curiosity clearly led you to what you're doing today. You said earlier that you just started researching to see if there was a possibility of doing this. So it's the curiosity that led you to where you are today. And that I always find that interesting, that the research and curiosity guides us to our next step.
I know, it's so true. And, when I was approached by this firm and they were interested in possibly hiring me, I was one of those cases where I said, well, I'm so interested, but only if I can make a really positive and impactful difference. And I'll need to see what that involves. And, there was a part of me that thought, well, I don't have a financial background and I don't have a business degree, so how could I be of use? And then what I discovered by being curious about it, as opposed to kind of taking myself out of the game because I didn't think I had the credentials, was that what I brought to it was a very essential component, the qualitative side, that if people weren't addressing that, all the best strategies from the business mind lead them beyond those 24 years. So that's been an incredible thing for me to see how I've expanded in my role in the world and what I've been able to accomplish by allowing that opportunity to show up for me and not shut it down because I didn't think that I had what it took, and to find out that what I did have was really vitally important.
That's such an important thing for us to all for all of us to remember, because if something does cross your path, don't discount it immediately, or should I say, don't discount yourself immediately, because it's there for a reason. So to take a second look at that and see if there's something that you're not seeing. That's where the questions come in. Asking those questions, those right questions, that'll definitely give you some clarity around that. Emily, is there anything that you would like to leave our audience with today with regard to blended families or family businesses that we haven't covered? What would you like to leave them with today?
Well, sometimes I feel like a bit of a zealot, but I wanted to share with anybody who's listening that even if you don't have a will, even if you haven't done anything to do your succession planning, you do have some succession planning in place already. If you have a retirement account, if you have a bank account, you have beneficiaries listed on those. And I can't tell you how many blended family members have beneficiaries listed that are former spouses. And if you haven't changed that, if you do have a will and you want that to go to your current spouse, but you haven't changed that beneficiary designation will override your will. And a lot of people aren't aware of that, and it causes a lot of mischief and disappointment and hurt and legal battles. And it's such a simple thing. It gets overlooked so often that I definitely like to leave my interviews by just reminding people, please update your beneficiaries, and please take a look at your estate planning documents and see what else might need to be updated as well.
That's great advice. As a matter of fact, it just reminded me, I worked with someone, and she and her husband had been married for 20 years when he passed away. And she knew that there were certain insurance policies, and one of them, he had not changed the beneficiary. It was still his ex-wife's name as the beneficiary, and she got the bulk of the insurance, the life insurance. So folks, if you're listening going, oh, that sounds like a really fluky thing, and you know that probably doesn't happen that often, you need to go to, if you're working and you have insurance through an employer, if you have even small insurance policies out there, even your bank accounts, your savings accounts, make sure that they're current, because it does happen. And it is, it will leave your loved ones feeling feeling less than acknowledged, and they will feel that you've overlooked something and didn't take care of things the way you should. So take care of your stuff while you can, so that there is no hard feelings afterwards, when you say, Emily.
Oh, my gosh, no kidding. If everybody who's listening immediately puts in your calendar, update beneficiaries, and make a commitment to make that one of your most important appointments in your life in the next week, you'll be amazed at just how good it feels and how it just furthers what it is that you want in your future going forward.
Wonderful. Emily, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us and share some of the great advice through your experience and of working with small business owners and blended families. You certainly shed a great light on that, and I'm sure people are taking away some information they'll be able to implement today if they're smart.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Absolutely. Well, folks, I hope that you've taken the notes that I suggested that you take at the beginning of the show. If not, you can always listen to the recording. Be sure to reach out to Emily. Check out her websites. Great information on there, wealthlegacygroup.net. And you can reach her through the website as well. Be sure to check out her book that will really help you with your estate planning. Just, if nothing else, it'll allow you to start thinking about it. That's the first step, just thinking about it. Because there are so many moving pieces, you may be missing some of those, and you want to make sure that you have everything covered. So, you know, I always leave you with an Empower thought of the day. So this week it is, coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is success. And that's a Henry Ford quote. So keep it together, folks. Work together, and we'll all be successful. Thank you so much for joining me on Empower Radio Show, and I look forward to having you next week. Thanks so much.
As we close our show today, we want you to know it's time. The time is now for you to cast off the chains of mediocrity and reach for that brass ring. The time is now for taking that giant leap to start a business. Step out of your comfort zone and become the you that you've always dreamed of being. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Empower Radio Show. That's at MPOWERRADIOSHOW. Thank you for being with us today on the Empower Radio Show.